If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You know, I'ma just, before we introduce, before we do anything, before we even say anything past what I'm saying right now, I'ma just hit this track because if you read the title and got excited, this is all you really want to hear.
X-Men.
That was heat, and I did the slow fade just to make it extra dramatic. Yeah, that was the theme for X-Men. And look, when I get famous enough to just make stuff happen, I just want to do the orchestral version of that, because you hear the, like, digitized, you know, harps and violins in that, and dings and dongs. It's like, I need to hear the real, I need the band on that.
Straight analog.
Oh my gosh, that, and I was thinking about themes just this week before even doing this podcast, because the Spider-Man theme was pretty, that one was pretty good. Spider-Man, you Spider-Man. And I'm gonna save that for when we do the Spider-Man TV episode. You gotta, for now, you just gotta take my word for it. So yeah, today we're back. It's your boy, Ify Wadiway. It's Nerdificent. And we have our guest host back again. You heard his voice already, so you know who it is. Ed Greasy!
Yeah, thank you so much. Ed Greer here on the Nerdificent podcast. This is great. This is a great occurrence.
I know. People were jazzed out of the last episode. Thank y'all for the kind words. And thank you for Ed finding the time to make it with us. Danny, she's a busy bee. She's been out here filming long hours, working hard, and me doing nothing. I'm just kidding.
I see you working hard.
Yeah, but yeah, so I'm glad you could sit down with us. And, you know, especially just that vibe we had going for miles, I was real excited to talk to you about the X-Men TV series, which, you know, let's cut right to it. This isn't the X-Men, like, history. This is just the TV series. Mostly because, one, if I was going to do the full X-Men, Danny would want to be here. Two, because the TV series is a great place to start, because I feel like that's where a lot of people our age started with, right? X-Men was the TV series. And I've already said this on past episodes, how the TV series did a real good job of covering actual events from the comic books and putting it on TV. And I feel like you don't get that with comic book shows now. They kind of build their own stories and sometimes even feel like they're in a separate universe.
Yeah, it does feel like they think that the comic book stories aren't good enough for the, like, yeah. Boy, Iron Fist, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at a lot of stuff. Even to a certain extent, you know what I'm saying? Hot take, even to a certain extent, that new young Punisher. I really felt like if you did more of him killing slavers and stuff, dudes like me who like him would have been down. So yeah, but this X-Men show, they really... I think they did almost like a primer for like the MCU. MCU picked some of the best stuff out of the Ultimates, best stuff out of the 616, and made a nice little gumbo that tastes good for the tune of billions and billions of dollars. So I think this was the man for an outside company to come in and see these characters this fresh and, mm-hmm. and do them this well. Boy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could just tell that it was a company that cherished the source material. And this is another thing that I say again and again, like a broken record, but whenever you see an adaptation, the only way it can be good is when the source material is respected and revered by the person who's making it. Once again, you know, some people love it. I don't hate it, you know, but the first live action Batman movie we got, Tim Burton never even read Batman. He just did his thing and had the best. And I think he did pretty well for someone who did not do it, because Dragon Ball Evolution was made by someone who didn't watch Dragon Ball, and that was just...
Well, I mean, the very first Batman movie that we were treated to, besides the 1966 one, yeah. where some of the fogies, I'm shaking my fist at my radio. But basically, it was almost like somebody... it's like that old parable of the three blind dudes who touched the elephant. And one of them touched the trunk. It says, it's a big snake. And one of them touched the legs. That's a pillar. And one of them touched the whatever. And they all have this different seeing of it, right?
Yeah.
It seems like Tim Burton like looked at the very, very, very surface. The very surface. Like, Black, Dark, Knight, got it. and did a movie that, even with just that amount of information, really did a pretty decent job.
Yeah. Yeah, I really... And I... You know, I really do still think his Batmobile was real. I liked it. I still to this day was like, you nailed that Batmobile. It's still one of my favorite Batmobiles. And I think it is, the best one that has been on the silver screen.
I mean, it is the Cadillac of Batmobiles. Yes.
Of course, the dude from Compton's going to love the Cadillac of Batmobile. But I mean, like, you had the Tumbler, which eventually did grow on me, but that it was like it was very much, I know we're talking X-Men, but this is a whole story where you can really see what the creator's going for in their Batman based off the Batmobile. Because if you look at this like elegant, dark, sexy Batmobile, that's kind of how you can kind of describe the first Batman. Because mm-hmm. when you got, you know, the latex Catwoman and like just like they really ramped up the sex in her. And then you have, you know, the functional, realistic Tumbler.
Yeah, the Tumbler was like almost like realistically ugly. Like I think if Christopher Nolan was a fashion photographer, he'd spray on acne on the ladies and stuff. You know what I mean? He'd just do something to dirty it up because he thinks that real is an aesthetic to aspire to.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And that was his Batman, was very mm-hmm. realistic. But
well, as far as the X-Men go, though, when you look at how realistic it is to try to put 70 dang years of canon
yes.
into a cartoon, you know, it's or rough. at that point, you know, like almost 40, you know what I mean? Trying to discover how you're going to characterize all these characters, and you know, there are certain shortcuts. Like I remember, Lady Deathstrike was in the series, and she was more of like a lover of Wolverine.
Yeah,
little changes like that would make it more engaging for an audience that hadn't read 1,000 books. But for the most part, like you said, keeping to the source material.
Oh yeah. So just to go down the bullet points, as always, X-Men. Also known as X-Men the Animated Series, or X-Men the TV Series, is an American animated television show, and it debuted on Halloween of 1992. What a weird day to debut a cartoon. You know, the day that the kids are most likely going to be out, let's debut a cartoon. And it debuted on the Fox Kids Network in 1992. That was 4 years after I was born now. Yeah, I nailed it. I'm usually not good at quick math.
Nailed it.
But X-Men was Marvel Comics' second attempt at an animated TV show. And it was after the pilot, X-Men Pride, spelled P-R. I tried to, like, pronounce it differently.
But, I did see that. I noticed that.
It was very weird. But it's spelled P-R-Y-D-E.
Yeah, for Kitty Pryde.
Yeah. And it wasn't picked up. So, but this one was a smash hit.
Well, I mean, it seems like when you find the right team, mm-hmm. you know, things can happen. Especially with Marvel properties back then, they didn't quite have all this control that we envision them having right now. Yeah. They're kind of, you're kind of giving your baby up to a bunch of dudes in Korea. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's to get so it right. True. You're just like, let's try. Yeah. So when Margaret Loesch became the head of the Fox Children's Network, which basically is the, you know, Fox Kids, she was the one who was kind of championing the Pride of X-Men pilot back in 1989, which is when they tried to do it, which I'd love to see that. You know, I want to know what the 1989 X-Men animated series was versus the 92.
They had that animated movie where Wolverine sounded Australian as hell.
Oh, man.
It was like, oh, mate, I'm Wolverine.
You know, and it's funny because before, like, comic books became this thing everyone was aware of and paying attention to, I can see how, like, someone would look at Wolverine and go, oh, that dude's definitely Australian.
Well, they couldn't see Canada. It's so funny that Wolverine is from Canada when he's such a hardcore dude and Canadian. Yeah. He's supposed to be so nice.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I know. That is so funny. It's like, yeah, no, that's it.
And also, I found it funny that they did do the voice work in Canada.
Yeah.
They did a bunch of voice work in Canada. And I think that's funny. They cast the whole cast. Like, I'm going to find a Gambit in Canada.
I know. Yeah. Hey, Canadians, can you do this Cajun accent? Oh, man. That's so funny. So Saban Entertainment was the one who was contracted to produce the show and ended up hiring the small studio Graz Entertainment to produce the episodes because they didn't have staff at the time to really do in-house production.
Yeah.
And then Graz employed the creative staff, wrote and designed each episode and drew the storyboards. And then the voice work was done using, like you said, the Canadian actors. And it was a Canadian and South Korean studio called ACOM.
Oh, yeah, and they were the ones that actually animated the episodes after looking at the storyboards from the Graz team. Yeah.
Exactly. So you remember when I was being real funny about it dropping on Halloween? And we got a little more info on that. It was originally set to premiere over Labor Day weekend, which sounds like it makes a lot more sense.
Right?
But they had some production delays, and that's why it got pushed to the end of October. And when they turned in the first episode, it contained hundreds of animation errors, which ACOM refused to fix. That's such a ballsy move where it's like, you mess it up and you're like, nah.
Yeah. Nah, you told me Wolverine's supposed to be black and have a mohawk. I did it that way.
It's like, you know, no, that's supposed to be Storm.
On this,
I was going to say email, but was email popping like that back then? It had to be. I'm crazy.
Well, at this highest levels of animation, maybe it was. But yeah, so, but they had delays and a bunch of errors across the first two episodes, I think, right?
Yeah. And the second episode ended up being turned in like right before the deadline with 50 scenes missing. Of 50 whole scenes missing. So they only had a day for editing, and they kept running into issues. And Fox eventually, in honesty, hearing the story much too late, kind of put their foot down and said that they'll just cancel the contracts if they don't get it right. So then they re-aired the pilot in early 1993, and all the errors were corrected. And it was history from there. Like, it's funny. It was like, oh, all they had to do was be like, we'll fire you.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
Okay. Well, we do need a job.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll take the mohawk off the Canadian guy.
Yeah, I guess. And we'll see what we could do.
All right. Do I have to erase the lightning coming out of his claws, though? Because the people in the studio thought that was pretty dope.
No, that has to go back, too. But yeah, through the whole series run, the producers had to deal with, like, those same quality control issues because people kept trying to cut costs. And then eventually people were trying to change the tone of the series to something more child-friendly and, you know, trying to find a way to get toys to sell on the show, which is like, oh, you want to sell toys? Just keep doing the show. Like, that seems like the easiest one. But that's an interesting one right there, just the trying to make it child-friendly, because that was, like, one of the big things I feel about X-Men was it wasn't afraid to just, you know, treat its audience as a mature group of people and just give you these stories. And we think about that a lot. And that's why it's so funny to see now where people will see like the regular show and Adventure Times and be like, oh, cartoons are so crazy now. And then, you know, back in my, it was like, what are you talking about? Like X-Men was like a straight up, it was a whole show built around an allegory for racism, you know?
Well, yeah, and I also think that what's funny about the X-Men show, as far as how we metabolize it, they are kind of teen problems.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They're teen problems that little kids were like trying to understand. Like, there's a love triangle with Jean Grey and Cyclops and Wolverine. There's the flirtation between Gambit and Rogue.
Yes,
you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that like teens would relate to.
Yeah, just to focus on that Gambit and Rogue too, that's a very mature, because you know you have the love triangle, which is a mature relationship, but nothing's more mature than I feel like that classic Rogue Gambit one, because it's the situation of like, even if they did want to pursue a relationship, they couldn't because Rogue's powers would murder Gambit.
Well, I mean, and that's just, as a kid, when you're just learning about sex, to be like, dang, I think they should have did that in like a sex ed. You know, there's some women that'll take your soul.
There's some women. I know. That'd be the weirdest sex ed where it's
That'd be like a straight Southern sex ed where they just blame it all on the woman.
Oh, yeah.
Real Eve status stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And just real ruinous. But the bottom line is, like, it was a golden opportunity to trick kids into thinking that they're going to lose their powers if they have premarital sex. Yeah.
And they wasted it.
Wasted it.
They could have done so much more.
Of all the myths, you know what I'm saying? Marijuana's addictive.
Yeah.
You know, all these different myths they dropped on us. They could have did that one and maybe saved some lives.
So, as far as the show goes, they featured the X-Men with a 90s look. I feel like that's important to add because that is a very specific look, which ended up having that yellow suit Wolverine that hasn't went anywhere since it came in until like I liked brown suit Wolvie.
Well, what was funny was he very very first came out in the yellow suit, and it was almost like Daredevil's weird yellow suit
where
it's like, this is so ugly and weird, and these tiger stripes, you're not a tiger, you're a Wolverine. Wolverines don't have weird tiger stripes. This whole thing doesn't make sense. You got blue gloves.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, he just looks stupid. And then he kind of went to this really cool like ninja paladin muted color scheme with the brown and the yellow, or brown and the tawny, like a lion's color in the comic books and stuff. But yeah, by the time that Jim Lee started drawing it again, I mean, Jim Lee can make any uniform look good.
Oh yeah, and you know he was like, nah, I like this weirdness. That's all about me. And Jim Lee, he's phenomenal.
His footprints. He's stepping all over these pages. No, his fingerprints are all over this.
Oh yeah, 100%. Because it definitely was kind of just borrowing from his era of X-Men. And I gotta say, being like a '90s kid, quote unquote, is. You just love Jim Lee. It's all about the lines, you know.
Oh man,
lines on lines on lines.
And the kids like me who are really into like I was really into inking, and I was like, yeah, man, you guys don't appreciate Scott Williams. All those little tick marks, baby.
It's like, give me more tick marks.
Yeah, that means it's really there, even though it looks hella 2D now. When you look at certain stuff.
Yeah.
But Jim Lee's a genius. Don't get it twisted. But like, yeah, Jim Lee even said when he was designing a couple toys that it was revealed to him that he draws hella 2D.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't draw 3D. He draws 2D. He draws for a 2D medium. His art styles have been have you ever heard that story of how Jim Lee, basically, his parents were Korean, obviously, and his parents were like, yeah, man, you're gonna be a doctor and all that jazz. And he's like, no, I'm not going to. And basically, he took some years off of college, and he ran on the beach and drew comics all day. When he was running on the beach, he'd be like, burn, Miller, burn, Claremont, Miller, running like thinking of the type of person he was going to be in comics and get his body in shape and then he would sit for like 10 hours and draw comics and submit his packages and stuff, and that's how he got in.
That's awesome.
So like, yeah, to have his designs be that integral to the company that they, through a third party, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like through third party transmission, his design still lasted. That's some heavy duty stuff.
Oh man. I mean, but that's what happens when you want it that bad, you know? Like, you're just like, I need this. So then you just become the best. But specifically what we're talking about in the Jim Lee era is the blue team, which I guess we can talk about the blue and the gold team.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, which one was Colossus on? I look like a fake nerd right now, but like, I loved Colossus as anything. I loved him throwing people.
Yeah.
That was my jam.
Fastball special.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is going to be the gold team, because the blue team is Cyclops' team, which had Wolverine, Rogue, Storm, Beast, Gambit, Jubilee, Jean Grey, and Professor X, as well as Morph. this is on the show. Let me get the actual blue team, because I know Morph was not.
We got to talk about Morph, though. Morph,
oh, we're going to talk about Morph, because that is something, even with the second not as popular animated series, X-Men Evolution, they had fun just adding a new character that everyone made fun of. And I remember in high school, because high school is when Evolution came out. And the reason I remember is because I think it had to be like seventh or sixth grade. I was going in on Spike, who was their made up character. And man, this teacher, I think it was like, I forget his name, but he looked like Eric Benet. And he got so mad. He was like, "More, Spike is actually a good character." And he's trying to tell me why. And I was like, "Look, of course you, who look like Eric Benet, is going to want to stand for the weirdo character." Oh, man, he's going to never listen to this. I was going to say, he's going to listen to this and be so mad. But I was like, why? I don't know. He was a nerd. So he might be like, oh.
Well, he'd be very happy with how you turned out from petulant little jerk.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh, I guess you put that dork nerdiness to good use. So yeah, so it was that, basically that blue team who came through, and yes, Colossus was on the gold team. But you know, you're saying how much you hate Morph. We went into it. We touched on it. With, you know, how it was with Spike. Let's really jump into it after the break.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You know, everybody has their own wellness routine, their own approach to a healthy lifestyle. A lot of the most successful ones include herbs like ginger root, ashwagandha, and so many others. Nature's Way has been sourcing herbs like those for over 50 years. They understand that nature is the ultimate problem solver, so they're dedicated to providing plant-powered formulas to help people live healthier lives. Their herbs can support your health in so many ways. For instance, ginger root and slippery elm bark have both been used for centuries all over the world. Ginger root has traditionally been used to soothe occasional digestive upset, and slippery elm bark to soothe the GI tract. St. John's wort, holy basil, and ashwagandha can provide mood and stress support, which is something we can all use in our modern life. I mean, these herbs come from all over the world, but Nature's Way knows where the best ones grow. They test for potency in their state-of-the-art lab, and their scientists are experts in all things herbs. What's on the label is what's in your bottle, and what's in your bottle are the best herbs around. To learn more, visit naturesway.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
And welcome back to Nerdificent. That was, I think, that was the most lax, you know, lead into an ad break we've had. We were like, let's just do five outros. But yeah, back with Ed Greer, we're talking X-Men, the animated series. And, you know, they added one. So for the most part, the cast consisted of what was known as a blue team at the time, but we did go ahead and add an extra character based off of Changeling called Morph, which...
Well, you know, but you know what's interesting about that? I do think that the X-Men, even Morph, is something that is serious to X-Men lore, because the X-Men really get off on the fact that, like, they can die. You know what I mean? Even though they've come back a bunch of times in the comic books, we're talking about the show, but everybody knows how often they come back in the comic books. All of them seem to have been killed at some point and come back, or been changed to little, yes, little versions of themselves or something of that nature. But for the show, I think it is important to show in, like, a team setting that yeah, we're all a bunch of kids doing a bunch of highfalutin adventures and they're fun and all, but we can die. So they always put some extra person, like James Proudstar in the original, you know, giant size X-Men. Somebody that can die to show how dangerous the X-Men situation is. And yeah, I think Morph is another in a long line of X-Men, just like red shirts, basically.
Oh my gosh. What's so funny is, you know, I was just kind of looking up pictures of Morph too. to just look, and I was like, oh yeah, I totally did forget about this guy. And the first thing I find when I search is this Sci-Fi Wire article that's titled "Why Morph Was the Best Character of the X-Men Animated Series."
Oh god. Well, dude, you know, clickbait reigns supreme.
Yeah. Oh man.
That seems really clickbaity to me. Like, because everybody who clicked on that article wants to fight the person.
That's the move. That's how you do it. You know, like, come fight me. So we're talking about X-Men, and we're talking about how, you know, kind of like teed off the MCU, which is a good way to kind of, I like doing a callback into a segue, because I might as well just force it, because that's super force. But I'm going to call back into a segue. But when you were talking about how it was the beginning of the MCU, we did have some crossovers, because we're talking about the Spider-Man series, how dope, yeah, that song is. There was that crossover they had with the Spider-Man series.
Well, Spider-Man had to pick teams to, like, yeah, do or he first he needed some help with some mutations or something.
Yeah.
And then they had some kind of adventure where he had to pick a team of heroes, and he picked Storm, which, you know, what's great about that? If I might break into this. When you were a little kid looking at X-Men, even in these shows, you always tried to identify one. It was like, you know, pick your turtle, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Type of style. And so who did you identify with? Like, we're talking about just the show. Who was your person where you're just like, ah, yeah.
On X-Men?
Yeah, a little if he's putting some knives in his hands, or a little
I think it was Wolverine. Like, that's what's so funny about me, and I think that's why I go so hard on, like, Vegeta heads, is because because, like, I was, like, the Wolverine character, and I feel like the same type of person who loves Wolverine is the same type of person who loves Vegeta, because they're like, you know, he's like the bad dude and he does what he wants and he's like edgy, and that's why I like him. and I feel like that's the same thing for Vegeta. Everyone's like, oh, he has, like, character progression, you know, but really it's like he was bad and now he's good. That's the character progression. Oh, he loves his daughter. That's a character progression. And then Goku's the dumb guy because he's, like, loves to fight and he's one note and goes, yeah, he's written into that box. That's true. But, like, he always, I think the one thing everyone's like, oh, Goku this. And it's fun to have this conversation without Danny here to interrupt and try and put her two cents in. But
I'll do it. Vegeta.
No, she'll have some good points.
Oh, she'll have some great points, yeah, but about Vegeta.
Yeah, she is such a Vegeta stan. I'm a Goku stan, but I just like the concept and the idea of, like, always giving someone a chance. Like, look, I don't want to have to body you. Like, we could be friends. We can use this energy to be better, but, you know, I will if I have to.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as Wolverine, I think he was a big fan. Like I said, when I was a kid, I was a little chagrined that they didn't do a bunch of Colossus on the X-Men show. Because, like, that was my guy. Like, I just liked his purity of heart. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, one of those characters. It was the first time I knew that I was rooting for somebody that I was not like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I am not like that dude at all. I wish I was like that dude. I'm not like him at all. But on the team, I think the only person, I think I just rooted against Gambit.
Yeah.
As far as when I was watching the show.
Yeah, I have to take it back. It wasn't Wolverine. I was a Gambit stan. I thought he was so cool. Like, he always was getting the ladies. He was like, you know, he had those cards. He was like, look, I was a huge Gambit stan.
It looks
stan.
Like if the Church Coat Mafia went to raves.
You know what? Look, I was all about it. And like I think I said this before, I was all about Gambit until he started getting bodied in Marvel vs. Capcom, and I was like, I gotta find a new fave. One that, you know, because you know you want to, when you play a game like Marvel vs. Capcom, you're like, I want to pick my faves, and when your faves is getting bodied by everyone else.
Well, that's when I used to play with on a sports note, when I play 2K with like teams that aren't good right now, but I really like them. And
yeah,
just, like, you learn all the tips and tricks, start beating people, then they're just like, man, you're cheating.
Yeah,
and I just know my players, dog.
A fun fact about the crossovers they were doing was the storyline where like the Beyonder and Madame Web are getting Spider-Man to lead like the heroes on an adventure, which basically the one you were talking about with Storm. The reason they wanted it to have all the X-Men, but they didn't do it because transporting the cast to Los Angeles where Spider-Man was done from Canada was too expensive. So they had to like just pick.
You just see like them trying to get there, also trains, planes, automobile stuff, and they're just making a bunch of like, that's my flight like.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So they just got it. And basically Storm lived in Los Angeles, so it just was a no-brainer. And Hulk and She-Hulk.
The actress that played Storm?
Yeah.
That's ill.
And Hulk and She-Hulk, you know, they were in the Incredible Hulk animated series, but because it was on the rival network, UPN, they couldn't do a crossover.
Oh, man.
And I think this was before the underpaid Negroes era.
I thought it was the U People's Network.
Oh, that's what you, like, I always, my mom always called the underpaid Negroes.
Well, there you go. That's the different forms of humor about that situation.
I know that UPN. Oh, man. The people who either never had UPN or didn't, like, grow up in the U.S. are going to be like, what? What are they talking about? UPN?
It was the CW before the CW.
Yeah. It was, and imagine the CW, but it's all black sitcoms for some reason.
Yeah. Homeboys in Outer Space. I'm just going to leave it right there. Oh, I'm just going to leave it right there. Homeboys in Outer Space. But as far as speaking of Homeboys in Outer Space, it seems like the X-Men didn't go to space till like the third season.
Yeah.
It seems like they were kicking it on Earth for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And that's that's something I get real hyped about. And I think we mentioned it on a previous episode, the difference between like, you know, street level Marvel characters, your world level Marvel characters, and then your cosmic level.
Right.
And you know, if you did see this, you're probably one of the main people who got hyped at that end sneak peek at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, because that's really what introduced, you know, Gladiator when he came into the picture. And then we started getting some Phoenix stuff too.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, and the thing is, I always loved when the X-Men went to space. You talked about that. Street level / you know, Massachusetts level / you know, Manhattan level / world level, and then cosmic. The X-Men to me were the first people from Earth to go into space and do major damage. You know what I mean?
Like, oh yeah.
They kind of went, especially with the whole Shi'ar Empire situation. You know, Professor X, the girlfriend, taking him to space, and they having some space adventures, getting involved in her Empire adventures. All that kind of stuff really showed me that like these guys each have like one power, but all together they're a cosmic entity almost. Like they can have an effect on an interstellar war. They can. I think that's the whole thing about the X-Men that a lot of people keyed on was like, especially like loners like me, I was like, damn, I wish I had a squad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you're right, because like it was the thing where their powers were kind of immense and oftentimes written to be weaker than what, like, on paper they actually are. Like, if you look at
that's the X-Men classic conversation. Like, no, okay, now Omega level Gambit.
Yeah. Which one of the things too that people like sleep on is that Iceman is an Omega level mutant. Like and I feel like Iceman got a lot of crap for some time where it was like, oh, he could do the ice. And he was like, well, he can literally turn the atmosphere to ice. Like that's how strong he is. But they never explore that. Except they did have one comic where they have to kill Iceman, I think, because he goes bad.
Yeah, like, it's super hard.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as far as the X-Men goes, I mean, each of their powers, I like the fact that, like, when they break them up into factions or they make them into sub-teams, part of, I think Professor X would really like to play Madden Clash of Clans or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think he'd really love that type of stuff because it's like, all right, I got my tank. I got this guy. I got, you know, I got Wolverine to get shot up, a Beast to jump around, like House of Pain.
But I think
it's interesting that, like, the X-Men's whole style throughout the series and the comic books and everything, they take on things that could beat up a whole team. I think that's also interesting.
Yeah.
They hardly ever run into some sort of, they run into teams a lot, but they'll often just run into some dude.
Like, yeah.
Magneto, I'll take y'all all out. Juggernaut, I'll take y'all all out.
Oh, yeah. And I think it is the funny, perfect beef of, like, Wolverine's hate for Magneto, where it's like, oh, you want to fight the one dude who can body you easily. Like, the one dude. It was like, it would be if, like, Superman wanted to fight Kryptonite Man all the time. It's like, this is the one guy who, like, really has no problem with you, but that's the guy you want to just go wild on.
Oh, dude, that's Wolverine's personality so much. It's like, he's always trying to fight. Basically, you're trying to mac on the girl who can hear your thoughts, right? And you're trying to take her from a dude who could blast you from hella far away. You got short arms. your arms too short to box the Cyclops. You know what I mean?
He's
a runt to the core, which is why I kind of do like Wolverine.
And I think that's why a lot of people like him, though, because he is like almost this underdog who is like his superpower amongst being like, you know, an adamantium coated claw guy, which, like, let's just reverse it back, because, like, a lot of people oftentimes mistakenly say, like, oh, Wolverine's power is adamantium claws. It's like, no. His power is bone claws and regeneration.
Yeah.
They were coated in adamantium. And that's your actually you can take with you to work and drop anywhere you like.
Also, they're not a power because there's been several times when Wolverine has been bound or some sort of situation where they turned off his mutant powers and he just pops his claws.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, and which was hilarious though, because if somebody wanted to, well, actually trace Busta you on that, it's like back in my day when I was a kid, it seemed like they were supposedly in bionic housings.
Okay.
In his forearms that make him pop out, and that's why they would always work. But if you nullified somebody's mutant abilities, could that limit them from tensing their muscles or whatever that would pop out the claws? Nerd talk.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? There's all that kind of stuff that you get into with Wolverine. And with I used to love when they would have Storm fight people, because, like, if you think about it, she's powerful like Iceman.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff that you can do. She's the magnetic poles.
She's a goddess. You know, she controls the weather, and that is one of those things that, you know, where you write an open book, there's so much you can do with it, and so much that probably hasn't even been explored yet with the ability to control the weather, period.
Yeah, and the responsibility therein. Like, does she feel bad when, like, hurricanes happen?
I know. Like, you could have stopped that.
You took a nap. Why were you taking a nap? No, and I love how they explore, even in the series, they explore a little bit about her powers are linked to her emotions. So that when she gets in a bad mood, like in comic books, I love how sometimes she'll make a little baby storm to, like, water a plant. Just a little tiny thunderstorm with lightning and everything to water a plant or something, showing how fine her control is. But in the show, in the TV series, it seems like they're more tied to her emotions. You could get her flustered, and then all of a sudden the skies get dark.
Yeah. But let's just kind of bounce around and, like, talk about the things that occur. Because, you know, and like you said, in the third season, they went cosmic, and that's kind of when they started introducing a little bit of the, you know, you had the whole Phoenix thing. But I think we should reverse just a little bit and talk about the cast of characters. So, because surprisingly, we didn't talk about that, because I feel like it's weird when we do a Nerdificent on things like this that are so in the zeitgeist that it's like, oh yeah, everyone kind of knows every X-Men, but let's just do it and we can talk about how we feel about each of them.
Okay.
First up and foremost, Cyclops. He was the
Sucks.
No, I'm sorry. No, we'll get into this because we'll get into this because I've had an interesting relationship with Cyclops. So Cyclops, aka Scott Summers, he was voiced by Norm Spencer. And he was basically the second in command of the X-Men. You know, obviously, Professor X being the top dog. He can fire a concussive blast from his eyes.
Mm-hmm. Concussion, not heat.
Yeah.
They're bastards out there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's concussive.
Yeah, not heat. You're not burning. And he and Jean Grey are in a relationship, and apparently at the end of the fourth season, they get married when Apocalypse has been, you know, doing his dirty work. I, for the longest, was not the biggest fan of Cyclops. I never liked him, and it was it's kind of like my roles were reversed in X-Men, where, like, you know, I did not like how goody two-shoes Cyclops was. He was the teacher's pet. He was, you know, I like, just something about that really made me dislike him. And the only time I started liking Cyclops, and this is going to step out of the show and onto the page a little more, was during once we got towards Avengers versus X-Men. Because I really like his whole...
His militant period.
Yeah. I didn't like that at all. Actually, I think I started to like him once we got to Avengers versus X-Men Cyclops, because I felt like he finally was stepping up to the plate as a leader. And because it just always felt like, you know, I think the best description is right here, second in command. He never took initiative, and I felt he was so emotional, and there were so much things he wished he could do and this, that, and the other, and he just never followed through with it. So,
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting about him is it takes a lot to be the leader character. And I think that's one of the things that is interesting about screenwriting is most people's original screenplays, the main character is super flawless. Nobody has to tell them nothing. Each of the character, everybody, all the characters know everything that everybody's about to say, and the conversation just flow like butter.
Yeah,
you know. And there's a distinct lack of conflict. There's all these different things, and like they'll never be a character. I always had trouble writing the character that goes, "Damn, Blade, that was tight what you did."
Yeah.
Like, I always hated writing that character, but you need that character in fiction. There's got to be somebody that does the moment for the audience to go, "That's Michael Peña reacting to Ant-Man."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really hard to write that character. And conversely, it's hard to write the character that goes, "Wolverine, you shouldn't go do that. Stay back at the thing." "Wow, nah, bub, I'm going to go." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The guy who's constantly telling people that they can't do stuff. The kind of Yoda character. They're supposed to be so damn smart, but all their advice sucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a hard character to write.
But also, it's understandable. You know, this is, you know, me older and, you know, having to take leadership on certain issues. You don't necessarily not want to go. I think the most recent kind of element of this was in Destiny 2. The Forsaken storyline, which, you know, the expansion was built off this, so this isn't a spoiler, but when Cade 6 dies and Ikora and the main character want to get revenge, it's Zavala, the Titan Guardian, is like, "Yo, we shouldn't do that. We have to protect the whole universe. We don't have time to go into petty revenge fights." And everyone hated him for it. Everyone was like, "This guy sucks. Zavala, he doesn't want..." And it's like, I get why you're mad, but that is, he is right. our whole home base, the start of the expansion was, it almost got destroyed. We were almost wiped out. So I can see why, from a leadership position, you can't advise someone to go do it. But if they go behind your back and do it, you're not going to be mad at them.
Right. Well, yeah, it's always sucks to be the guy who's going like, "We can't expend those resources,"
yeah,
or whatever. That always is a sucky guy in movies and stuff. But if anybody wants a story about Cyclops where he's actually cool, just look into Josh Whedon's run. He does a really, really good job of repurposing that whole legend of him just basically being bequeathed the leadership role because he had such little confidence that Professor X was like, "If this was ever going to do anything, I got to make him the leader because he sucks otherwise."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just him being put in that role. And then there are certain things in the Josh Whedon run that show you that Cyclops is really smart, really manipulative, and very, very, very powerful when he lets loose. And I think it's just sad that it came that late.
You know,
so many people kind of did write him as a stick in the mud, including in the show. But he does get the girl. So
So that was this trade-off. Yeah, I think it was in Schism where you really kind of see the... Because I forget what the timeline of those comics. So there was Schism that happened that basically split the X-Men up into Wolverine's X-Men and Cyclops X-Men. And then there was X-Men versus the Avengers.
The Avengers, because all the X-Men get like Phoenix Force, basically, and become like a big gang. Like, almost like what that section of Marvel Comics was like the late 90s, The Authority. there were these super powerful Wildstorm characters who basically ran their world.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. This does make sense. And Schism happened first, and that's when I really was anti Scott. I was like, oh, this guy's whack. Yada yada yada. And then the Avengers versus X Men, and they get the Phoenix Force. Mm-hmm. It was pretty hard. Like I was against him, but I really respect the stance he took. And then they became the Phoenix Force, and that was wild. That's a good read.
The Phoenix Squadron.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was the leader that was kind of a stick in the mud. Then Wolverine, who everybody loved.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody loves Wolverine because he's a bad dude. He rides motorcycles.
Yeah, a.k.a. Logan.
Anybody who's ever had a skinned knee wanted to be Wolverine.
Yeah, so Wolverine was voiced by Cathalje Dodd. He's a mutant with regenerative healing factor, heightened senses, and adamantium-laced skeleton that render his bones virtually indestructible, and retractable claws capable of cutting virtually anything. He was attracted to Jean, but decided not to come between her and Scott after many attempts of coming in between her and Scott.
Dude, that's the funniest part about that character description. It's like, I stopped attempting to bang supermodel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No. You never had a chance. You never got close. What are you doing?
Yeah, he's like, all right, I'm done. I guess you could have. But I think, you know, the more I think about it, I can totally see why Wolverine's so popular and why I might have hated Scott so much. Because Cyclops was the jock. He was the leader. Mm. He was the goody. He was the teacher's pet. He was jacked. He had the girl. And he had this guy, Wolverine, who everyone kind of looked down upon, didn't trust. He had this dark past. You know, Wolverine was an other in a group of others.
Right. That's interesting. And they did treat him like a shelter pet.
Yeah.
And he was significantly older than everybody. I think that's something that is very lost on people understanding the you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Most of the time you think of Wolverine as just like a hairy version of these kids, but like, it's like 200 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's kicking it with these kids and trying to like learn. And he's in community college, dog.
Yeah.
Like, he's in straight community college with powers. And he's chilling out in here. And all these dumb kids or all these pheromones are going around. And he's like, hey, I want to get in on this. But like, you're 200, dog.
Yeah. Like, chill out. Then we have Rogue. And she possesses the uncontrollable ability to absorb memories, powers, and energy of whoever she touches. But if Rogue holds on to someone too long, their consciousness will be trapped in her subconscious. And she has permanently absorbed the superhero strength, durability, and flight of Miss Marvel. Miss Marvel was left comatose because of this. I think I missed that whole like explanation.
Oh yeah, that was way back in the days for comics fans. That was like
a so. Long was this time something ago. That happened off the show?
Oh yeah,
and they kind of
I think they might have referenced it a little bit. In some way to kind of see how she did that. But like Rogue's regular powers are pretty like I'm just walking around.
Imagine if the Miss Marvel movie comes out, the Fox deal went through, everything's good. We introduce the X-Men, and they use that storyline, and then Brie Larson is one and done in the movie because they're like, oh, she's in comatose now. Rogue has her powers. Fans would be so mad.
Or cut to the pager in her hospital bed, just shaking uncontrollably.
Yeah, and then like, but then it's picked up by Rogue. Like, fans would be so confused. Can you imagine if that was the end where like it's picked up by because you'd be excited because it's the X-Men, but you'd be mad because you lost Miss Marvel.
I think we could see a cool do-over where you could see that actual storyline come in. You know, when they get their stuff together and get all their properties to get along.
Yeah.
We could see a lot of these things. I liked Rogue because she was always the person who out of these X-Men, besides, like, I'd maybe say Nightcrawler, and he wasn't really on the show, but, like, besides Nightcrawler, the one whose powers sucked the most, like, messed their life up.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, with Scott Summers, yes, you got to wear glasses all the time, even in the shower.
Yeah. That's so true. We never talk about that. Even in the shower, you got to wear those glasses, or you blast in a hole in your shower.
Exactly. But for the most part, these people didn't show any ill effects for their powers, but she was unable to literally touch people. And we really, really discount how important that is.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's so true. but I still don't think she has the power that sucks the most. And I think it's never addressed, and I would love it. Jubilee can only shoot fireworks. I don't know how we've like let this go long enough. And I'm going to just save the roast till we get to her, because I'm going to read her power, what they have the description, because I never read the description. I'm going to scoff at it and then go into this rant that I'm getting ready to grow.
Oh, and let's give credit to Lenore Zahn. She played Rogue in the thing. So, all right, you want to do Storm?
Yeah, yeah. Storm, Aurora Monroe, Ayanna Morse, who we mentioned earlier, in 1992 to 93, and Allison Seeley Smith from 93 to 97. She's able to control the weather, like we said before, basically a goddess. She's second in command of the X-Men. And that's always been something cool that has not been explored, but also something to complain about. Like, it seems like Storm is older than Scott, yet she can't get full control of the team. Why are we giving it to this dude, Scott? Storm is much more capable.
Well, you know who would be... it'd be interesting to see them. In the comic books, they do have a real battle over control. But I'll tell you who has control right now. This ad break.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Probiotics aren't a trend anymore. They're a mainstay in the health and wellness aisle of your favorite store. And Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are the easiest way to introduce a probiotic into your routine. I mean, they're just what they sound like. Adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. But they still pack that probiotic punch. Each tiny pearl has 1 billion active cultures and protect against occasional bloating, constipation, and digestive discomfort. And they actually support both digestive and vaginal health, so that's a win-win. And according to my little fact sheet here, they're designed with a triple layer coating that protects each pearl from stomach acid, so they can make it all the way to your small intestine where they're needed most. You probably didn't think we'd be talking about the small intestine today, did you? Well, digestive health is kind of important. If you know, you know. To learn more about Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls and how they can fit into your routine, visit naturesway.com.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant. AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
And welcome back. Ed hit me with that sneak ad break. He's right. We're back. Me and Ed Greer. We're going to close out. We're going to go through the rest of these characters, talk about the arcs, and then close it out for y'all. I hope you're having fun, because we definitely are. Because we can't believe we didn't even do all these characters. But yeah, we're talking about Storm, Aurora Monroe. She controls the weather. She, like we were saying, she's basically... Yeah, there has been this thing where she's kind of been like the other leader, and honestly more capable than Scott. And there has been runs where they did have like a fight for power, and she kind of like led. There were a few comics where she had her own team and ran off. And then what was the one where it was all women, and I think Storm led that squad? You remember
that? I think that was all new, all different X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting about her is they do give her a few weaknesses, like a claustrophobia.
Yeah.
And bad taste in dudes.
are you trying to come at my man T'Challa?
You know what? They're not married, is all I'm saying.
Look.
It didn't last. That's the real Eric Benet.
Oh my gosh. That made me so mad when they broke them up. There was no reason. Like dang, I was so salty in comics around that time, because they canceled Black Panther, they broke up Aurora, and because that was over the Avengers versus X-Men, speaking of which, that's when they broke up, and I was so pissed. And they did not retcon it. They did not get them back together. They're just not together.
Yeah. But it always, I don't know, man. I liked it. enough, but I also thought it was like, you know, your two black nerd friends at the party. Meet each other.
And I was down for it. Two pieces of African royalty. I was like, I'm here for it. You can tell who's the African in the room right now, because I was like, yes, let's go.
You're right that it wasn't Luke Cage and Storm.
It was
T'Challa and Storm. So there's a graduated Africanness.
Graduated Africanness. So then we have Beast, who I think is probably one of the more popular X-Men outside of like your usuals, which is Dr. Henry Hank McCoy, which was voiced by George Buza. And basically his mutation, I mean, like he got hairy and he got superhuman strength and agility, but really it felt like his, because he wasn't like out here tossing stuff, you know, like didn't feel like he had superhuman strength. He felt like he had like the superhuman strength of like the dude who plays the mountain on Game of Thrones. Like he's a power, like he's as strong as a power lifter, not necessarily, and he can like read upside down. Like that was his big thing that they loved. They loved having scenes where they walked in on him reading upside down. Like that, why would you do that? I don't see that being comfortable, even if you're a mutant.
Well, his superpower was blood did not rush to his head. So he could just kick it upside down all day. That's a secondary mutation.
He would just always be upside down. Like that's when you know, like, you're like, how are we going to show that this dude different?
Yep. That the animators, that's their go-to. Oh. One thing about McCoy that I thought was interesting was, like, it is interesting how most of the smart characters are always, like, jump around dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Captain America is supposed to be super smart. T'Challa is supposed to be super smart. Definitely, they both are very super smart. But the bottom line, they're supposed to be. That's part of their power. That's part of their set. And but there always are guys who have to jump around and dodge. It's like, they almost never make besides maybe the Blue Marvel, which is a whole other conversation, but dudes that are smart and super powerful.
Yeah.
You know, because even, like, Thor is a dumbass.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a charming thing about him, no question. But, like, he's not doing calculus.
Yeah, he's definitely not doing that. That is funny, where it is that kind of like, oh, we can't have you be smart and buff. That's too much.
Right, so they kind of nerf your powers a little bit. So, like, all the smart characters. I think that was interesting that they used a little bit of his science stuff. Like, obviously, there has to be some guy to fix the jet.
Yeah.
The movies really put him on jet fixing duty.
Yeah, you got the big, super strong blue guy. What are you doing? He fixing the jet.
Yeah.
Just a mechanic. And he spent like the most of the first season in prison because he was trying to destroy the government records for registered mutants. And that was funny because there was this cool blue dude and you didn't even get to see him in action like that because he was locked up.
Yeah. Well, trapped in the cell. You can't do flips. That's the real tragedy. There's no room to flip in here.
Well, here's a fun fact. Buza, who voiced Hank McCoy, actually appeared in the 2000 live-action film playing a truck driver at the start of the film. So he was able to come back like, yo, what's good? So then we got my boy and someone that Ed does not care for, Gambit, Remy LeBeau, voiced by Chris Potter from 1992 to 96 and Tony Daniels in 1997. He can charge any object with explosive energy and just toss them. That's his power. They only explode once he lets go of the object, and he also wields a staff for close combat. And he used playing cards. You know, I don't know why he would use cards like that. That feels like he's like, oh, I took a magic class and I really got to get my money's worth.
Well, I was talking to Aaron Rand Powell, who was on here the last time I was on here. Yeah. And he was like, that's the type of thing you do when you're in jail.
Yeah.
Like, that's a jail skill. You just throwing hats in a card over and over again. Cards in a hat over and over again.
Yeah.
And so, that seems, and he was a thief. So there you go.
Well, that's he's also one of those characters that they never really explore like that. Because, like, for a while, like, that was his thing. He would just throw these charge cards. You would never see him, like, walk up to someone and charge. Like, he technically was a brutal, he could walk up to someone, charge them, and blow them up. Like, he could blow people up with his hands, but he chooses to throw these weak guards.
Yeah, he could be Blastar, but he chooses to jump around.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I should have liked them, because I love me a jump around character. Daredevil, Spider-Man, those are my mans. They do it, the jumping around. I even like McCoy a little bit, but I just think his jumping around is inferior. but you know, the bottom line is I should have liked him.
Yeah.
But it just didn't get over on me, and I think I'm just that little bit older than you to where they sold me Wolverine as the ultimate. And they had like a danger room scene where Remy LeBeau comes in, Gambit comes in and challenges Wolverine to like a fight, and he smacks up Wolverine. And I was like, you know what? I'm out. Check, please. I'm a little kid talking about check, please. I checked that comic into a fan. I think it was an annual. I checked that into a fan.
You're like, I'm good. What was cool, too, about Chris Potter, who was voicing him, he was actually filming Kung Fu, The Legend Continues in Toronto, and he was unfamiliar with the X-Men, but David Carradine, who was his co-star, was a big fan of the comics. So he was like, all right, I guess I'll do it if my man Dave's about it. Even funner fact, we know he's an actor, he actually auditioned for the role of Cyclops in the year 2000, which makes you wonder how different his career would be now if he actually nailed that role. I'm not trying to diss, I'm just saying, I feel like that kind of sounds like a diss when you say it, like how different would your career be now? He's doing well. I didn't know he was also in Queer as Folk. I used to love that show.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I watched it religiously because it was like my first like adult show when I was growing up. Like, when was it out? From 2000 to 2005. So yeah, my high school years. And I was like, okay, cool. And of course, you know, they showed boobs. So that was like the other thing. And I was like, okay, I'm in.
Well, now we get to your girl.
Jubilation Lee. Come on.
Voiced by Allison Court.
And
she was the newest and youngest member of the X-Men.
Come on!
And she's close to Wolverine. She's still getting used to her powers, which are the ability to generate firework-like explosions. Allison Court. Allison Court and Cathal Dodd had been neighbors when Court was still a child, and Dodd was already known as an actor in Canada. And she attributes her character's chemistry to them, you know, being acquainted before. It's pretty dope.
They say firework-like explosions, but you never see it do any damage. Literally, anytime she uses it, someone is like, ah, well, like my eyes.
In the comic books, they did have one that they went to like Madripoor or Japan or some damn
way. Which, by the way, if you don't know, Madripoor is a fictional like... is it a country or city?
It's like a crime island.
Yeah, in X-Men, where you when they're there, you're like, oh. We up to no good.
And Wolverine will be definitely involved. And so basically, some bad stuff happened with the Mandarin or some jazz. They were trying to make like Jubilee into like a weird geisha or something, like trying to mind transformer or something. And she spazzed out and blew up the whole like villa that they were in with an immense show of power. But Chris Claremont was really good for that. Like every 50 issues, somebody would do something way beyond their powers. She'd be like, damn, that's my favorite person, boy. Yeah.
I mean, you never saw, like they say firework-like explosions, but if you watch the show, they just look like fireworks, period, full stop.
Hey, man, let me throw a bunch of M80s at your face.
But they weren't popping like M80s. They were popping like sparklers, where it's like, ah, stop. Get that out of my face. Like, that's what it seemed. She looked like she was mildly inconveniencing someone. And I think it also comes with the fact that you got the dude who is exploding playing cards. You got someone controlling the weather, a guy with knives coming out of his fist. A woman who could suck the life out of someone just by touching them. A guy shooting concussive blast out of his eyes. And what is she doing? Fireworks. And it had that cheesy sound. As a matter of fact, I'm glad we plugged in. Let me see if we can get that that sound effect that would play when she did it. Someone did a compilation of all of Jubilee's scenes, which, what?
Wrong with being a mutant anyway.
Okay, so in that scene, she blew up an arcade machine. The most damage I've seen her done in history. All right, here's her versus the Sentinel. Perfect. Look, just listen to the sound, and I'm going to describe what happened. She's putting her hands up. Hold on. We got to just do the full breakdown. Also, this is what Jubilee wore for some reason. She wore a raincoat. Some short shorts, some knee-high boots, a neon shirt, and some Bret Hart glasses. That was the coolest thing about her, is that for some reason she was rocking the Bret Hart glasses.
Well, she was definitely a product of the 90s, let's just say that.
Look, we're far enough along, because I didn't say nothing for a long time, because, you know, as another person of color in this small, heavily white cast, I didn't want to drag her like this. But we're past this. We've introduced so many better X-Men who are people of color. The Hulk is Asian. I can finally drag Jubilee for how trash she was and why they didn't make her powers better. And anything, I'm not mad at Jubilee. I'm mad at the creators for this. So what just happened, that sound, was her fireworks that looked like fireworks. And actually in that scene, the Sentinel just put his hands up and it did nothing. It was almost like the video was like, don't worry, this is to prove everyone right when they're dragging Jubilee. And then here's this scene. I actually do remember this and I still don't get it till this day. It's been almost 20 years and I still don't get this.
I hope it keeps those slime balls.
So she used her firework to just pop off metal. Because it was when, you remember that scene where she's like captured and she's like, oh
pew, yeah.
Pew. Oh, the inconsistencies. Oh.
Well, I mean, like I
there's
said.
There's going to be some Jubilee stands like who are going to come for me.
I think they're like M100s.
And the last thing that I'm come for is this name. Jubilation Lee. And then it's Jubilee. Like, it's just like, it's very obvious you came up with Jubilee first. And lucky for her, she doesn't get the worst name ever that still goes to Black Bolt, whose real name, do you know Black Bolt's real name?
Just say it. Oh, God.
Blackagar Boltigan. What? Come on. That's when you could tell, you came in early.
Hey, what's up, Luka Don Cajunstein?
What's up, Cyan Klops Smith?
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Okay, so we're gonna get to who I think are the almost king and queen.
Oh, 100%. The next person we're gonna talk about is literally so broken that they've killed her off for a year until they realize they can go back and introduce the younger version of herself and retcon from there. And that person is Jean Grey, who eventually became Phoenix, who is voiced by Catherine Disher. She's a telekinetic and a telepath. She's in a relationship with Cyclops, weak butt, and they marry at the end of the fourth season when she's captured by Apocalypse in a time-space continuum. And Disher had originally auditioned for the part of Storm and didn't get it. She was like, I'll do Jean. Jean Grey is cool because, you know, in every instance of Jean Grey I've seen, she's kind of been, you know, they've given like Storm and Cyclops like second in command, but really, and I call Cyclops the teacher's pet, but really Jean is Professor X's star student. And I think it's because they kind of share the same power, and he recognizes that she's that woman. She can like do whatever. And he's like, you're going to surpass me one day. Little did he know she was going to be even crazier.
Well, yeah, and I think what's interesting about her is she, for all her teacher's petness, they kind of have her be also a little bit rebellious because of the fact that, like, there are other forces that are trying to give her tutelage that aren't Professor X.
Yeah.
It seems like that's always happening to her or her clone. We won't get into that. But, like, whenever she's in there, there's always something trying to whisper in her ear. And I think they show it as the Phoenix Force, like, oh, come on, baby. You could be super powerful. You could rip up the planet. And he's just like, I'm just trying to teach you how to balance stuff, you know, and make you guys not look for these droids. I'm just trying to teach her this stuff. And she's this Omega level thing that he has almost wrangle.
Yeah. And then we're going to close out with Professor X, who is, you know, everyone knows him. He's the dude in the wheelchair. Professor X, Charles Xavier, who was voiced by Cedric Smith. And he's the founder and the leader of the X-Men and a powerful telepath and an analogy for Martin Luther King, which which you only understand when you meet Magneto, the allegory for Malcolm X. But throughout the series, he fights for mutant rights while teaching his students the importance of never giving in to temptation or lose sight of what really matters. And to be patient And when over the humans through respectability politics, which, you know, you can be woke and mad about it, but the fact that it never works in the history of X-Men, you can just be like, well, we know X-Men tried to tell you it don't work.
I tried to told you
it don't work. Professor X all this time been trying, it don't work.
Well, I mean, it's also just the whole allegory. Not to get too heavy, but you know, they'll kill you if you wear a suit too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And that's kind of his whole thing. He's so presentable. There's so many early X-Men adventures where he like calls up the White House, or the White House talks to him and he says, yeah, I'm going to send an X-Men. We're going to do some stuff. And the president is friendly with him and stuff. They kind of threw that out the window because it was like Martin Luther King didn't have the presidency.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? He still was.
If you see the movie Selma, you'll see that they were on the phone back and forth.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go.
I was agreeing with you. I don't know if, I think that was one of the criticisms of Selma, is that, like, he's, like, literally on the phone with, like, Lyndon B. Johnson, and people are like, what?
Yeah, because, like I said, if that's beyond my knowledge that all happened. But, you know, the bottom line is, he's the good one. And even the good ones get a bunch of violent sanctions and sentinels busting down your door. You know, it doesn't really pay to be a good one sometimes. And I think he finds that out over the course of time, which is why when Cyclops becomes more Malcolm X later in the comic books, especially, it's a weird friction.
Yeah, we looked it up. We went and fact checked. This is Nerdificent, not Wokeificent, so we're not going to be 100%. But yeah, no, there's a photo op of LBJ with Martin Luther King. I'm sorry, Ava, I should have believed you. Don't drag me. I love you. I promise you I love you.
But I think it's a testament to our generation not believing anything nice like that could ever happen.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right?
And at least we didn't put it down as just a Photoshop. A photo op. Because, you know, James Brown kicked it with Nixon, too. I mean, yeah. I don't really know.
Oh, my gosh. Look, it's been a long week. We're going off the rails. I'm going to talk about... There's some fave episodes, but there's one I really want to land on because I think we can talk about it. And I can, like, we'll say our favorite or most remembered episodes, and then we'll close it out like that. But the one that I want to just talk about, because it's on this list that comicbook.com put together as favorite episodes, but I want to talk about it from my perspective. And now that we gave you the lowdown, we can just talk a little more freely, is The Night of the Sentinels. It was probably going to be on everyone's list. It was the pilot episode. And what happens in this episode is Professor X is, they basically go to pick up Jubilee from her family because the Sentinels are on the loose and they're trying to get rid of mutants. And that's pretty much a running thing in X-Men, is the Sentinels come out and they tear stuff up.
Sentinels come out at night.
And it was like a A1 pilot, because any pilot where you're adding someone new to something is just the perfect writing device, because now you have to introduce all of these people to this one person, which in turn introduces the audience to all these people, but also you're getting the reality of everything at stake, because not only is this new person coming to the team and they're just introducing it, they're explaining to Jubilee's parents why she should go off with this weird man in a wheelchair and like leave her family, because she's not safe. She's at risk. She started showing signs of mutant powers. Right. And it just kind of, it's almost like a perfect pilot for a show like this, to lay the groundwork of the world and what's at stake, who's on the team. And, you know, if you were going to check out an episode, I'd say check that out. They were giving it out. There was a deal on Pizza Hut when they were giving out X-Men Pogs where they gave out a VHS with that. I wonder if it's still at my dad's house.
Oh, that's excellent. And I also think, if we're going in episodes, the episode where they introduce Magneto.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's really interesting to introduce to kids the concept of somebody who, like, hates people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hates humans. Like, the concept of, like, basically racism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And his racism, his being the hate that hate produced.
Yeah.
Let's not get it twisted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? His hate is the hate that hate produced. And to have little kids seeing that and knowing that that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That was very interesting to me.
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah. And we could talk a billion years about Magneto, but the bottom line is Magneto in the series was very much like he is in the comic books. There's always that relationship with Xavier. There's the Martin Luther King, Malcolm X aspect, but there's also just the only thing I have a beef with X-Men at all is the expediency and the brutality that Magneto is almost always willing to work with.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that was Malcolm X at all. I mean, yeah. you see, he died a man of peace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that part was a little bit like, you know, mm-hmm. but of course, calling him the mutant Honorable Elijah Muhammad, it doesn't quite sell. You know what I mean? That's a little bit too much of a deep cut, you know what I'm saying? Like, I like Rogue because she's half a man age plus seven. Anyway,
Oh my gosh.
No one's gonna get that. But anyway, the bottom line is Magneto in the series was very cool, and they did end up touching on iconic storylines like the Phoenix Saga, which we touched on earlier, and even Days of the Future Past. They had Bishop playing that, like Kitty Pryde from the movie, mm-hmm. and Kitty Pryde, Wolverine from the movie, Kitty Pryde from the actual comic books. They transposed those characters and just made it into Bishop, who comes back to kind of tell the X-Men, hey, man, you're messing up. Look at this M on my face, dog. Things went horrible.
Which I love Bishop. Bishop was tight because he had a perm, a bandana, and a big gun. And I was all about it. I was like, I've been waiting for that cosplay. I need to do a Bishop all this time.
Well, dude, I have a challenge for you. Look up the Joe Jusco, and people at home, look up the Joe Jusco Marvel card series pictures of Bishop. I want you to cosplay as that Bishop. Not Will Portacio, Scratchy Lion Bishop, not the one that Larry Stroman drew in a limited series, not any of that stuff. That particular tight pants, Joe Jusco, muscle bound Bishop. I challenge you to cosplay as
Are
that.
Are we talking about this one right here?
But like the more painted ones. But yeah, okay. But like that style though. You got the bandana on and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that's that's the one I was trying to do.
Yeah, you look like a prince. Controversy. Or like DeBarge. He looked like DeBarge from the future.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Jeez Louise. Okay. Look, we got to get out of here. It's been fun. We've been going for a long time, but we've been having fun. I hope you enjoyed it. You know, I hope all the Fernies aren't too hot that, you know, Danny hasn't been able to make it, but she'll be back soon. Until then, we'll have our friend Ed hang out. How's that sound?
Yay.
Where can people find you, Ed?
Oh, at Ed Greer Destroys on Twitter and at Ed Greer Destroys on Instagram. I do lots of art and stuff on Instagram that I'd love for people to like. And they can check me out at my Nerd Goat podcast, nerdgoatpodcast.com.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Ed drew a whole Wolverine while we recorded this, and I'll make sure to tweet that out.
Put it in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put it in the show notes. And you know, it's your boy, Iffy Wadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram, IfDs on Twitch. And for all my comedy heads who happen to live in the Bay Area, who probably work at Google or something, you know, come through, give me an Apple Watch, and I'll give you a long hug, like straight up 2 minutes, 120 seconds. We'll put the timer on. I'm just kidding. You don't have to give me an Apple Watch. But I will be up in San Francisco from San Francisco Sketch Fest on January 19th. I'll be doing two shows at 9:30. I'll be doing live at the 9:30 or 9 p.m. Either way, go to the website. You can check it out. I'll be doing live at the Alamo. I'll be doing some stand-up. And then at 10 p.m., White Woman, we'll be doing Your Token Friend live and direct with a guest we're still picking out. It's going to be great, I promise you. And then the next day, I'll be doing a live podcast, Yo, Is This Racist, with Andrew T., Tawny Newsom. It's going to be a good time. Please come through. Please give, if you want a patented iffy hug, let me know and I'm going to hug you. Let me know if you have back issues. And then if you do, I won't lift you up. I've made that mistake too many times. I don't risk it anymore. All right. Stay nerdy, y'all.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.